Welcome to the Grappling Discourse Podcast. Today, I want to talk about the PGF regular season. A bunch of you guys have been asking my opinion on that, and I also want to talk about behavioral changes. Guys, the PGF was sick, right? I enjoyed it. I watched probably 80% of the PGF. Again, very entertaining. I thought there were tons of incredible matches. I learned a lot this week. My biggest takeaways were these. Look, if I was going to be coach next season, I would make sure that I did an insane amount of research on those bottom 10 guys, like who my last two picks were going to be. Look, I was completely wrong strategy-wise. I thought you needed to go out there, you needed to get one of the top guy or the second best guy on your team, and then you need to try and pick up a really strong number two, and then, the 3, 4, and 5 didn't matter as much because you were going to have guys that were putting up points. But I was, again, completely wrong. If you look at Jean-Jacques' team, I think he had two guys that are probably, I would probably rank as like the 4th and 5th best guy in Davis and Elijah. They're to me the 4th and 5th best grapplers there. When I just watched them, they both looked really good, but they definitely are not better than Andy and PJ, in my opinion. But again, two very good grapplers that can put points on the board. And then Jean-Jacques got very lucky. And he even said, look, I got lucky with a couple of these picks. I didn't really know who I was getting. I just lucked out. And he picked David Evers, Ben Eddy, and his last pick, Nathan Haddad. Now, Nathan Haddad was probably the steal of the draft just because the dude was incredibly tough. He gave very tough matches to every single person. And he was Jean-Jacques' last pick. Last pick. And if he wouldn't have told Helio Seneca, because him and Helio Seneca are boys, like that he was going to get Nathan, I wonder if things would have been different. Because, again, he saved the money to get Nathan, and Nathan had a phenomenal season. He was by far the best last pick. David Evers showed out, as well as Ben Eddy. Both those guys were incredibly tough to sub. And even though in a couple of matches they got dominated, they got outclassed, they still didn't give up points. And that's what it takes to win the PGF Championship, is you cannot have guys that are getting dunked on. Some of the other teams, like Black Rifle, the Black Rifle team that had PJ and Max Hansen, they got kind of screwed because their last two picks, Sampson and Jamie Carnell, were giving up points left and right. I mean, Jamie Carnell gave up by far the most points this season. And so PJ missed the playoffs, but a lot of that is due to the scheduling. His strength of schedule was much harder than a lot of other people's just because he didn't get to face the two guys that gave up the most points. And so coaching-wise, it was like first day, the draft, you saw PJ's face when he heard all the money that was being spent on him, and he was like, oh no, I was hoping that people wouldn't spend this crazy so I could end up on a team that was very balanced. And again, I was wrong. I would have done probably the same thing. Like, no, I would have blown half my cash on PJ, and I would have been in the same, I would have done the exact same thing that Dean Lister did. And our team would have finished last. But yeah, the scheduling is like the most important part, right? So after you make your team, you're hoping you have 5 guys that, you got 3 or 4 guys that can deliver consistent points. And then you're hoping that, again, you don't have the guys getting dunked on. So even those last two guys that you picked, while they're not the favorites to win, they're going to score points against the other team's worst two players. And that was the difference this season. Easily, that was the biggest difference. And if you think about it, each guy had 12 matches, the guys that made it through the whole season. Well, there's 20 guys. You have yourself and your 4 teammates, and you don't face those guys. Then you have 3 guys that you don't face on the roster. So the scheduling plays a really important part. Like, you're hoping you can avoid, like, okay, who are the top guys? We got Davis, Elijah, PJ. Hinata Kanuto, Andy Varela, those were probably the top five guys. And Max Hansen as well. I mean, he didn't give up any points all season. So you were hoping you could avoid two of those guys with scheduling. Like, hey, hopefully one or two of those guys are on my team, and then hopefully I can avoid another one or two of those with just the scheduling. The other important aspect to all of this is when you face a guy. And so Daniel Sather's eight... What is the perfect point for what I'm about to say is that Daniel Sather had an incredible first 2 days. He was leading at one point, I believe, and he was in the top three at points going into day three, but he got injured in his match against Davis Asari, and he had to sit out the next 2 days. So he didn't compete days three or four. Still made the playoffs. He did that well. He scored, and he had some incredible highlights, but had to pull out. And so guys that were supposed to face him, Daniel Sather, ended up facing a replacement guy. And the replacement guys were all way lower caliber than the dudes that actually were on the roster, especially when you're talking about Daniel Sather, who was easily a top eight guy this season. And so some of the guys that faced Daniel Sather day one, a guy like Matt Elkins, who had to face him day one, he ended up getting flying armbarred. Well, if he would have faced him on the last day, he would have faced a replacement guy and probably gotten some more points. And Matt came on really strong in PGF fashion. That's just kind of what Matt Elkins does. He usually starts off slow. And the last 2 days, he had some great, great matches. But those first 2 days were real tough for him. But again, if he faces Daniel Sather in his last match, he faces a replacement. And maybe he gets a choke and he finishes with enough points to make the playoffs. So just some really interesting facts or some points about the PGF. And I think that's what's really cool about a season. It just adds so much. It just adds a lot of different wrinkles into somebody's game plan. You just don't know. Like, oh, you're supposed to face this guy day three, but is he going to get injured? David Evers was very, very difficult. Right, he did very, very well, but he ended up getting popped pretty badly by an Aoki lock by Jet Thompson. He has to sit out. It's the same thing. Now you get to face his replacement. So yeah, going into next season as a coach, like if I was going to coach again, or if like, hey, somebody contacted me like, hey, I'm going to coach next season of the PGF, what do I need to be wary of? Those would be like the three things I'd talk about. Was like, hey, you need to pick a balanced squad. It's super important that you get the best bottom guys. You want to avoid, like, whoever you think the weakest is, you have to avoid those guys at all costs. So if you think, man, I think these two guys are by far the weakest, have to avoid them at all costs. Second, you got to tell your guys, you know, like in just like the scheduling, and a lot of that comes down to luck. And then third, obviously, you're trying to make sure that all your guys stay healthy. So we need to tap early, tap often. And look, just because you have a guy on day three or day four, there's a good chance. There is a really, really good chance that you're facing a lower caliber, like a replacement guy stepping in on short notice because that guy's going to pull out. And we saw a bunch of pullouts this season. John Combs got injured. I already said Daniel Sather and David Evers. Samson ended up dropping out day three. There were a couple of others, I believe. I think there were two more, and they're just escaping my mind. But yeah, you just imagine, let's just say of the 20 guys, six guys dropped out. I mean, that's more than a quarter of the roster. Now, looking at this season, I made some predictions, and I'm pretty pleased. You know, the biggest prediction that I got right was how well Jet Thompson and Kevin Buehring were going to do. Jet especially was a star. He absolutely killed it. Beat some really good dudes. I believe he beat four black belts throughout the week. I definitely called that one, so I definitely kind of feel like a little bit of a genius with my recommendation of getting Jet Thompson in there and seeing him do so well. Kevin Buehring also did great. Elijah, man, he was super, super sharp as well. He did ended up losing a match to PJ Barch. He got heel hooked by PJ. But other than that, he looked very, very strong. Obviously, the match everybody wanted to see was that third match between him and Davis. Hopefully, we get to see that tomorrow. But I was really happy to see Elijah because he was the face of the PGF. And to me, it was important for Elijah to have a good showing because it really validates what the PGF had been doing and just the guys that were coming in. And so if you had, you know, again, the guy that was like your Babe Ruth, who's the dude that's just got most of the records and he's won multiple championships. And if he would have went out there and just done poorly, it would have kind of been like, well, all those other dudes in the PGF weren't very good. But I think people can see, like, man, like, there were some really tough dudes. Like, again, Matt Elkins came on, did very well the last 2 days. Kevin Buehring, I believe he made the playoffs. Again, Elijah, I think he finished second. I don't think he wins. I think Andy Varela is going to win tomorrow. I predicted that going in. I still believe it. I still think Andy takes it all tomorrow, especially since PJ did not make the playoffs. I think Andy takes it and beats everybody. But yeah, it was super important for Elijah to do well, and I'm very, very happy that he did. He ended up walking away with $100,000. Yeah, that team, I mean, Davis, Elijah, David Evers, Ben Eddy, and Nathan Haddad walked away with $100,000. Mind-blowing. Technique-wise, I think we saw a lot of guys trying to play specific games. And this is something that me and Travis talked about. And I think it's what makes Travis so dangerous in a PGF format. Is Travis, he has so many different games. I think that's what you saw in the last PGF, is he had so many different weapons he was willing to use. Or I feel like most of these guys were very, very single-minded. Most of these guys went in with the same game plan, matching every single one of their matches. And I think it hurt some of them. A guy like PJ, I feel like if he just would have switched his strategies up and just started taking what was available instead of trying to force the chokes, he easily would have made the playoffs. I mean, days 3 and 4, when he finally decided, look, I'll take whatever, I'll even take breaks, let's start doing some leg locks, ends up getting 5 submissions, all breaks, but he gets 5 submissions and beats some of the best guys this season. It's still so crazy to me that he missed the playoffs, because he arguably, I mean, beat Elijah, beat Buehring, beat Canuto. It's like, man, he's arguably the best dude this week, and he didn't make it. Just so crazy. But, yeah, I feel like a lot of guys, they played pretty stiff. A lot of guys didn't want to give up points. A lot of guys didn't take a lot of chances, and a lot of guys missed the playoffs because of that. But a lot of guys, yeah, they had A games, and they weren't willing to deviate from that. And I feel like in a one match, like, hey, you got a super fight, or, you know, you got 3 matches to win the championship, I can see that. But to me, I feel like some of those guys needed to change their strategies from day in and day out. And it just looked like a lot of them were like, no, like, this is my, like, I am going to play this way. Even if it hasn't been working all week, I'm going to go out on my shield. And so I feel like that was something that was really lacking, was just the change of strategy. Saw a lot of leg locks. I feel like leg locks were the most consistent submission. I mean, we saw a lot of heel hooks. We obviously saw a couple of Aoki locks from Jet Thompson. We saw a couple of flying submissions. I told you guys we were going to see some flying submissions just with Daniel Sadler and Canuto. It was bound to happen. Canuto's, especially flying armbar, was one of the top 10 submissions I've ever seen. I've watched that so many times. He got so high on that submission that, I mean, he jumped. It was incredible. Just, if you haven't seen it, find it. It's all over the place on Instagram. It's easily the sub of the season. But yeah, we saw a couple of flying submissions. Obviously, there were some rear naked chokes, but that was like really it. I don't know how many did we see other than the flying arm bars. Did we see any other arm bars? There were a couple of triangles. Matt Elkins had a huge win over Kevin Buehring for his first of the season. That was, Matt had 2 phenomenal submissions, that one, and as well as he had a wrister from the twister position. He ended up finishing a wrist lock in his last match, which was crazy. It was super, super slick. But yeah, like we didn't see a lot of, like, we didn't see really any guillotines. There was maybe one or two Darce chokes, but not a lot of chokes. Like I said, it was mostly, you had some flying arm bars and a lot of leg locks. And then, you know, there were definitely like a handful of rear naked chokes, maybe five or six. But I mean, points were hard to come by and the chokes were really, really hard. I don't think there were any guillotines. And if you would have told me that there were no guillotines this season, I would have just been like, there's no way. I mean, John Combs is in this thing. Now, John Combs obviously got injured, but nobody else managed to find one. A couple of guys like tried multiple guillotines. There were definitely some close ones, but nobody could seal the deal. Don't think there were any arm triangles. Like I said, I think there was one or two Darces. I don't think there were any anacondas. So yeah, those chokes were very, very, very hard to come by. And you can look at the points. The lowest scoring season ever. And there was a bunch of guys that just missed the playoffs because of how low the scoring was. Commentary, production, everything I thought was great. I thought Alex, the sideline, Alex Wendling did a phenomenal job. I'm a big fan of hers. I think she has great content, and she killed it all season. She had really, really good interviews. I thought Brandon, Egghead, and TJ did well. I mean, TJ always kills it. Egghead did pretty good. Brandon did pretty good as well. I feel like there's times, though, Brandon's, like, too complimentary. Like, he's just showing too much love. And I feel like he was, like, super – I feel like he was, like, kind of over the top of, like, how well things were going. And so he was super, super happy. But it just seemed like half the broadcast was him just, like, telling how amazing this guy is. Or he's like, this guy's amazing, and I love that guy. And, you know, so he was kind of, like, almost celebrating, it seemed like. Usually I feel like we see him a lot more analytical, just kind of breaking moves down. And like I said, I just feel like he was a little bit more like, man, this guy's like, it was just a different style of commentary for him. I don't think he did bad. I just, again, I feel like I could tell how happy he was with how the week was going. And obviously he was super, super proud. But yeah, I thought that was great. The production was great. Obviously Keelan. What was really cool about it was I feel like the first day of the draft, there was definitely some major hiccups day one in the beginning for the draft. Then day one of matches, there were a few hiccups. You know, I know there were people, I saw some people complaining online about just some of the production. But then each day they got better. And then by day three, and I thought day three and day four, the production was absolutely phenomenal. And you can't ask much more, especially when you're talking about the other products that like the other shows are giving us. I mean, this to me was head and shoulders above any other jiu-jitsu event that I have seen. And so those guys absolutely killed it. Again, I like the team, the commentary team. Brandon and TJ always do a phenomenal job. Egghead is necessary. He is very necessary. And while I think Egghead gives some pretty, you know, he gives some interesting jiu-jitsu takes. I mean, he's just a blue belt, right? So sometimes he'll give some jiu-jitsu takes, or he'll just make some predictions on matchups. And, you know, I don't know how well he knows, like, the competition scene outside of the PGF. But he is a PGF expert, and with the scoreboard and how things change, he knows the history of the PGF better than anybody. He just does such a phenomenal job as the PGF expert. I can't say enough about how good he is in that role. And it is cool to see him thrive in that role. Now, the changes. So these are some of the changes I would make. To me, there's a couple of really, really big ones. One, first, let me say this. I absolutely loved the stalling calls. I thought Brandon did that. I would give Brandon a 10 out of 10 on the stalling calls. He was phenomenal. He called it exactly how I've always envisioned stalling should be called. I don't want to see guys just like Ben Eddy. I don't want to watch Ben Eddy just cover up and just play super, super tight defense on bottom. Like, no, I want you to open up, try to escape. Nobody wants to watch you get pinned for 4 minutes, you know. In that match against PJ, I don't want to watch somebody just cross their arms and just go, oh, I'm not going to open up my space. Like, no, take chances. If you get subbed, like, that's good content. It doesn't hurt your stock. But we need to see action. And I loved how Brandon didn't, because sometimes they'll call stalling on the offensive guy. And I'm like, look, he's already done. He got the takedown, or he forced you to pull guard. He passed your guard. And now you're in the worst position you could be. Like, why does the top guy need to move? The onus is on you. He's already done multiple things. Like, it's your turn, buddy. It's your turn. You're the one that's got to make something happen. And I loved Brandon's interpretation of that. I didn't know what to expect. He said he was going to call a lot of stalling calls. And he delivered. Now, I feel like there was, and I know that they, you know, the referees were in charge of that. And Brandon was, you know, he gave them the interpretation. But I feel like there were a couple of times referees interpreted it. And I don't want to say just differently than I would, right? And obviously, that's humans, right? Like, of course, they don't see it exactly how I'm going to see it. I feel like me and Brandon, just listening to his commentary, we were pretty much feeling the same way most of the time about the stalling. I mean, I'd say 90%+. Whenever Brandon would be like, yeah, okay. And especially day four, I didn't watch all of day four. I watched probably 75% of it, but I feel like they were not calling stalling anywhere near as much for that last day. And I heard Brandon though saying, like, man, I feel like this is stalling. I don't know why the, you know, I feel like the referee should be more on this stalling call. And I completely agreed with him. So anyways, I thought that was phenomenal. That was the big change for this season. PGF always has a change. This was the big one, and I thought it was a home run. And I would even say, man, let's even keep it even more aggressive. Like, dudes cannot hide behind just like, I'm going to just do the swap shutdown. Look, anybody can play defense, right? That's the easiest thing to do. The hardest thing and the hardest expression is to go out there and submit somebody. And so if somebody takes your back and you're just, you know, you're a strong, athletic guy, like, you can just cross your arms and, I mean, kind of like what Kevin Sherrill did in a few of his matches when his back was taken. And look, that is good defense. But that's like the easy way out. That's the easy thing to do. I'm going to see you force, like, you have to move. You have to try to escape. And when somebody's taking your back for 4 minutes and you haven't escaped, it's like, all right, I'm ready to move on to the next match. But yeah, so now to the changes that I would make for next season. Look, this is the one rule I would love to make. If you do not get a submission during the season, so it doesn't matter if you make the playoffs. It doesn't matter if you get tapped a bunch of times. But if you do not get a submission, then you do not get invited back. Now, you could go win a qualifier and earn your way back on the show, but you do not get an invite back. Some of the guys, I feel like, really didn't showcase much or really didn't put themselves out there. And especially in matches where they felt like they were going against superior grapplers, they didn't take any chances. And the scoreboards reflect that, you know. And I said that there were going to be multiple guys with 0 points. I was right. There were a bunch of guys that did not score. And I didn't watch this guy's last match. I didn't watch AJ's last match. But I'm assuming he didn't score. AJ, I didn't understand the love AJ was getting all week. To me, AJ put on a pretty poor performances. He didn't take any chances. He actively stalled in multiple matches. I mean, he probably had 2 matches where he attempted any offensive moves at all. I mean, he had the match against the replacement, the kid that, you know, he had trained with, John something. I can't remember his last name now, but John Chandler, maybe? I think it's John Chandler. But anyways, he tried a couple of Kimura arm bars against John, didn't get the finish, and then he had one more match, I can't remember who, on today, day four. And he tried the same, like, he had a couple Kimura attacks. Maybe it was Ben Eddy? Anyways, he just grabbed a Kimura. But that was it for all the matches. And I didn't find his interviews very intriguing. He just didn't feel like a fit for the PGF. His style wasn't a fit. I don't know, you know, like, he just wasn't for me. And look, I've been an AJ, like, I like watching AJ. There's definitely been tons of matches I've enjoyed watching from AJ. But those are like ADCC matches. To me, that's the only format AJ is interesting in. But with this rule set, again, when it's like the whole goal is to score points, and you don't attempt to score points basically all week in 12 matches, it's like, I don't want to watch that. I don't want to watch a guy. It just seemed like he was out there to not get submitted. And it seems like he was kind of letting everybody know. And then he would, I don't know, his interviews there were a couple of interviews I just thought were completely whack. They just weren't funny. They weren't, I don't know. I thought his character missed. I thought that was, to me, one of the few big misses this week was AJ. I was not a fan of his performances or his interviews or any of that. But yeah, that would be like my big rules. A guy like him, it's like, you've got to eliminate those guys. Guys that are going to put on boring matches. And especially multiple. I think everybody, like over the course of 12 matches, or let's just take a sport like the NBA. Look, they play 82 matches during the regular season. So they take days off, like, right? There's times players, they're tired, they're on the road trip, and it's a back-to-back. And some of the best teams, they go out there and they put up absolute stinkers. They look terrible. There are so many times the best team in the league will go out and lose to the worst team, right? It happens. So you're allowed bad games. I'm not saying that you're allowed a bad performance. Like, I thought Andy versus Hanato Kanuto, their former teammates, thought that was kind of boring. I feel like they both played it pretty safe. Same thing, Andy versus Elijah. That happened today. I feel like Andy was kind of like, hey, I've already made the playoffs. I'm saving it for tomorrow. But he had a couple of phenomenal performances throughout the week. You get the pass. You know what I'm saying? But when you put up match after match after match and you're not going for any submissions, you're not trying to score, you're not, like, it's like, what? Why are you here? Like, that's not, to me, what the PGF is. That's not the avatar of the PGF. Now, there were a couple guys. I was pretty skeptical of Cam Herd being invited again. I'm not going to lie. Now, I like Cam. He's a nice guy. I think he's a really good grappler. But I didn't see him again. Like, I saw him last season, and he didn't make the playoffs last season. He didn't really score a lot of points last season. And obviously, the talent level went up tenfold. But I thought Cam was, like, he has improved a ton. So whatever he's doing, he needs to keep doing, because he had some really exciting matches. He went out there and tried to kill. He was kill or be killed. And so I think, you know, even though he scored, failed to score, I don't think he had any submissions this season, right? So I'm pretty sure he failed to score, but he put on some awesome performances. He got submitted in multiple matches. Like that match against Elijah was, I thought, excellent. He took it to Elijah. He passed his guard a couple times, and Elijah had to throw up kind of a Hail Mary triangle, his patented triangle, in the last like 40 seconds to get the submission. But I loved, like, he could have played safer, and he could have walked away and went, oh, I drawled with Elijah. I drawled with this guy. This guy couldn't submit me. But he stayed in people's faces the whole time, and I thought he did absolutely phenomenal. And so I'm kind of comparing AJ versus Cam Herd. And for me, it's like, man, if you're going into a season like the PGF and you get zero submissions and you get submitted zero times, well, what were you doing there? You know, like, what were you doing? We need guys that get dunked on. You need the Jamie Carnells. I think Jamie got, what, one submission this year? I was happy, very happy. A lot of guys, he had a very tough season. You imagine, like, a dude that did very well at the qualifiers, and I'm sure he's the type of guy, like, he goes, guarantee, he dominates his local comp scenes. He's probably done well at a couple regional shows, but he steps up to this, and like he said in his post-interview for his last match, you know, I love how all the guys kind of get one final say or final word before the season's over, but he had a tough season. He was saying, like, this is one of the hardest things mentally he's ever done. And he was like, man, I was kind of being a crybaby after those first 2 days. But look, brother, I understand. You took a beating. But those guys, again, are super important. And so I'd rather have another guy like that come in that's going to go, like, each match Jamie went in, he tried to win. He tried to put himself in positions to win. He was the weakest guy this season. I'd rather see another Jamie step in than having another guy like AJ come back. So yeah, that'd kind of be my thing. Is like, oh, you got zero submissions this season. You can't be invited back. The only way back, you can't even be an alternate. The only way back is to win a qualifier. That's definitely the big one. I really liked having the famous, like the legendary head coaches, and huge shout out to those dudes. I mean, obviously they went, spent a week. I don't know if they made any money or not. You know, I'm not on the inside of the PGF by any means. I mean, I definitely hear a lot about the PGF and I kind of know, but I don't know the inside, especially of like financial stuff. And anyways, even if those guys got paid a couple $1,000s, it was still super cool for them to come out. Seeing Hodger there, I had multiple people message me and go, dude, wait, is that Hodger Gracie at the PG? Like, and one of my buddies, he trains at jiu-jitsu school. He messaged me and was like, dude, I didn't realize the PGF like was that, like, I didn't realize that. Is that really Hodger Gracie in the front row? And I was like, yeah, dude, he's one of the coaches this season. And tons of people said that. And it seemed like all the coaches were great sports. They took it seriously. I mean, especially a guy like Dean Lister. I mean, you could hear Dean every single match. He was trying to coach his guys, even though they were, I believe they finished last. He still didn't give up on his guys. And he was trying to help all of them in their matches. And I thought that was super cool. It'd be pretty cool, though, to have like more of a coaching staff, though. And I think it'd be kind of cool to have dudes. Like, I know that they kind of had some advisors because some of the coaches, I don't think, knew everybody in the season, you know, and they didn't do a lot of research, but, you know, going in. And so I think they had some dudes helping them out, making draft picks. But it'd be kind of cool to have a little mini team, right? Very much the Ultimate Fighter. And obviously, the more people you bring in, typically that means you're shelling out more money. But yeah, that would be pretty cool. I think it'd be cool, like, next season. Legends again, or do you go to more active competitors? Do you try and get, like, Gordon Ryan, Craig Jones, those type of guys? Or do you go back to, you know, hey, Jean-Jacques, you're going to be invited back because you're the winning coach. If he wants to, you're the winning coach. And then find three others to challenge Jean-Jacques. Maybe Jean-Jacques just keeps his team, right? Maybe he just keeps his team. And the next time 175 comes around, his whole team returns. And then you bring 15 new guys that get drafted. And they try to beat Jean-Jacques' team to take over the 170-pound title, 175-pound title. I don't know. I think there's a lot of cool changes or just like ways you could interpret going forward the coaches, and particularly like, hey, do we bring the same guy back? Does the team come back together? Or is this just a one-off thing? Now, because 100K, like, I know the champion hasn't been crowned. Whoever wins tomorrow is the champion of this season. That is the most important thing. Me and Brandon have talked, and we both agree, like, man, we do think it's super impressive. Like, Davis finished number one points overall. Like, that's super, super impressive. But at the end of the day, the champion is determined in that postseason. But, yeah, it would be kind of cool, though, right, if you had a champion team. Like, no, Jean-Jacques, we're going to bring back all the guys from your season, and that's, like, your team. And then, again, we're going to bring in 15 new guys. Maybe some of the returning guys, obviously. Like, I thought Canuto and some of the other guys definitely deserve an invite back. We're going to invite them back, and we're going to do another draft, and we're going to see if any team can beat Jean-Jacques' team. What changes would you guys like to see? There's really, to me, not a lot of criticisms you can make. To me, though, the most important thing is, though, that player selection. The player selection really determines how exciting your season's going to be. I feel like 80% of the roster was perfect. There's definitely a couple of guys I was pretty skeptical of. And then a couple of those guys shine. Like I said, Cam Hurd, I was kind of like, he shined. AJ, again, I thought he was a stinker. And there's a couple of other guys I didn't really think, like, they added much to the season. Now, I know it's got to be difficult getting 20 dudes to commit. And obviously, you got guys constantly pulling out. Like, Kieran Kershuk, he's supposed to be in the season. He gets injured at trials. So you can't count for that. And at the end of the day, you've got to just kind of pull people in. But, yeah, I think there needs to be, like, really strict, like, hey, we need to make sure this guy is PGF, like, has the PGF spirit. is going to try and come in, provide exciting matches, and he's going to try and score points. Make sure, guys, that you tune in tomorrow, or I guess today, because this will be coming out today, the day of the tournament. Tune in. There's going to be a bunch of matches. Obviously, they're going to do the 8-man tournament, and they're going to crown the biggest season of the PGF. They're going to crown a champion tomorrow. We will see who it is, but it's going to be on UFC Fight Pass. There's going to be a bunch of other super fights. I know Nakaya's got one on there for the female title. I know there's a few others. But check it out. It's on UFC Fight Pass. And it was crazy, man. People that complain about that, like free all week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, tons of content. Friday, hey, we're partnered with the UFC. It's going to be on UFC Fight Pass. What, $12 a month? You're not willing to pay $12? I can understand if it was just like a one super fight thing or there was like 10 matches. But like, you have watched tens of hours of jiu-jitsu for free. Very entertaining. Some of the best jiu-jitsu you will ever watch. And you're going to complain about $12 paying? Insane. Just insane to me. If you don't have UFC Fight Pass and you're a martial artist, well then what are you doing? How do you not have that? But especially, hey, I've supported and watched all week, but I don't want to give out $12. Dude, it's $12 freaking dollars. Get it, watch it tomorrow on UFC Fight Pass. Last thing I want to talk about. I talked about the PGF a little bit longer than I thought I was. I guess I had a lot more to talk about with that than I originally thought. But just making changes. Guys, this is something that has happened, just come up a few times in my life recently and today. I was talking with one of my really good friends, and we were talking about a situation, and I was explaining it like this, and it's just something I've really started to kind of pick out. In situations where you start getting frustrated with another human being, it could be business, it could be personal, it could be whatever, right? It's so difficult once you've established a baseline pattern, like a behavioral pattern, right? Like you've committed to doing something, or you maybe you've allowed something to slide, or let's just say something like this, right? If you're the friend that is constantly paying for your other friends, so you and a couple of your friends go out, and that one person shows up, and there's, oh, I forgot my wallet, or hey, I don't have money to pay. Can you pay for me? I'll pay you back. And they don't pay you back. And this goes on for months. And over the course of a couple years, they owe you something like a couple $100, probably, maybe even more. And the moment you bring that up, and especially if you're like, hey, I'm done paying for you. Like all of a sudden you're the bad. It's like, whoa, 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 I didn't know it was that big a deal. Like, it's pretty crazy to me that like the once you allow something to happen behaviorally, like if you allow somebody to kind of take advantage of you or, you know, maybe lie to you, cheat to you, whatever, they'll keep pushing that. They'll keep doing that same behavior. And the moment that you go, hey, I don't allow anybody else to do this in my life. I'm not going to allow you to do that. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You're the bad guy now. And the reason I'm bringing this up, again, there's a few reasons, but we actually kind of have this, we had an issue with the school a little bit. We just had an issue with one of the parents, and it's not even that big of an issue, right? They have a couple of kids. And here's our policy, guys. Let me explain this real quick. Our policy for the kids is, number one, we want this to be relaxed. We never want the parents to be miserable. So if your kid hates it or they're just crying, they don't want to come do jiu-jitsu, you've tried to make them come, you think it'd be great for them, but you're tired of fighting them, they don't want to come, please cancel. Let us know. I promise I will cancel your membership that second. We don't want any parent to be stressed about jiu-jitsu. Hey, you want to go play soccer? You want to go play baseball? You want to go play another sport? Let us know. Just communicate with us. Give us a date. Hey, soccer season is April 1st to June 1st. We will pause your membership and you will not be charged during that time. Whatever it may be, we just always tell our guys, please communicate. We're a really chill gym. We just ask for communication. And again, there's this family, they have a couple kids that train with us. And they've just... they won't communicate, or they've not communicated in the past about, like, one kid, you know, is going to be doing this, and so they miss a month, and then they get charged, and they're kind of like, oh, well, they weren't here this month, can we, you know, pay back? And then maybe they just come one time during that month, and they were supposed to be on hold, like, the kid's not supposed to be there, and we're kind of like, okay, we'll let that slide. And it's just happened quite a few times over the past 2 years that they've been training with us. And it just kind of hit, like, on the head where they've been kind of, like, wishy-washy. They haven't trained. They've trained one time the past month, and the mom wants a refund, or they want to be credited for this even though they've trained in the past month. And here's why I bring all this up, is that in the past, we've kind of, again, gave them a lot of allowances, even though with most people, we're like, no, we need definitive dates and all this stuff. Because they have multiple kids taking the class, it's kind of like, okay, well, and we get it. One kid's coming, and then the other kid, you know, maybe practice was canceled, or again, there was just an off day, or whatever it may be. It rains, so soccer got canceled. Well, they're coming too, so they might as well jump out there. Look, we're not going to charge you, no, we're going to turn your membership back on. But we kind of feel like they're taking advantage of a little bit, you know, and again, they're kind of expecting a refund, even though, again, they'd come and they didn't let us know this time that they wanted to be paused. And there's just a couple of things. And part of me wants to kind of explain it like this. Like, look, we feel like maybe you guys have taken advantage of this a couple times over the past year. We don't really normally do this, and yada, yada. I kind of give that spiel. But I realize that since we've been the ones, you know, myself especially, that's kind of been like, oh, yeah, 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 come in, train today. Like, yeah, of course he can jump on the mat, you know, that I've kind of allowed this behavior, and that, you know, I can't be like, whoa, 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 like, why do you want a refund? Why do you want? So what we did, or I was like, look, we're going to give you a refund for this month, but in the future, please, like, I just gave him like this strict, like, hey, let's get back to you being like everybody else. Please just give us, if they're going to be out, please give us like a handwritten note, either send an email, send a text to our business phone, or even better, come in the office and give us, and we will take care of that right then, but give us the exact dates. If the kids are going to be out for the month, let's just, hey, if they're not, you're not paying for this month, kids don't train this month, and just communicate. Let's just get back to like communicating, and that's how we ended up handling. But part of you, though, wants to be like, look, I don't want to give a refund. You didn't let us know. You didn't. But I'm like, ah, in fairness, we've allowed them, you know, and I've allowed them to, you know, just like, oh, yeah, come on, kind of come and go. Like, you know, you can just, you have a kid, like, just jump out there, you know. And so I say all that to say, sometimes, you know, when you get irritated with the behavior, you got to recognize, are you allowing somebody to treat you like that? Or have you kind of given them permission in the past to do something? Is your roommate eating your food? And have you never really said anything, or has it never really bothered you, but it's for whatever reason now it has started? Well, if you just explode, they're going to look at you like you're a crazy person. Communicate and just let them know, like, hey, like, this is just something, like, it bothers me that you do, or just, you don't even have to say, but, like, hey, I want to go forward, don't eat my food. Hey, going forward, if you don't have, like, I'm not going to pay for you anymore, you know, I don't pay for anybody else, it's just, I want to kind of start, like, you know, I'm taking better care of my finances, and I realize, like, a lot of times when we go out, I'm spending double or even triple because I'm paying for you, so, look, let's just, I'm not paying you for you anymore, that type of stuff, right? Just something to think about, something I was thinking about a lot today as I try to mature and get older. It's like, look, sometimes the things people do that irritate you, they do them because you've allowed it in the past and they think it's okay. And sometimes you just got to set boundaries in a healthy way so you don't lose the relationship, you don't blow up, you don't do any of that. You just do it in a healthy way, communicate. And people, for the most part, will understand, and the relationship will only get better because of that. Until next time, guys, I love and appreciate you. Peace.